The BBC presents My Music, a radio panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here's Steve Race to introduce the teams.
Thank you. Yes, My Music again. A contest being between Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton on the one hand, and on the other hand, David Franklin, partnered by Frank Muir. Gentlemen, most popular songs have what's known in the trade as a middle eight. Not all, by any means, but most have this eight-bar middle bit before the return of the main phrase. Here are some middle bits. Ian Wallace, a somewhat classical middle bit for you. Ian, the composer, please, and the soloist's name.
Yes. Well, the composer must be Mozart.
Yes.
And the fact that the most prominent instrument playing was a French horn.
Yes, again.
And the fact that Mozart's horn concerto is usually, not by any means always, but usually associated with the late Dennis Brain.
Yes, that will get you your second mark. Yes.
Oh, finish your sentence.
Well, he was going to go on
Why
and say...
Why should I? I've got my two marks.
Ian was going to go on, of course, and say that there were, in fact, four horn concertos by Mozart, and that was the rondo from number one.
Weren't no, you? I wasn't, actually.
You have your two marks. One mark for Mozart, the other for the name of Dennis Brain. Dennis Norton, again, singer and song title, please.
Every penny he makes helps a lot to take care of Mom. He's all she's got. Extra, extra, hustling only can. For Mama depends on her little man.
Just a kid named Joe.
Yes, that's
what
the title.
His second name is, I don't know. There's a connection between that and Mozart.
Is there?
Yes, Nat Ganella.
Yes.
Who was singing it, did a version of Mozart's Requiem called Old Man Moses Dead.
But what you actually get the marks for is saying that the song was called Just a Kid Named Joe, one mark, Nat Ganoa, the other mark. David Franklin, in your case it's not the middle eight bars, but it is the middle phrase. David, composer and title or popular title, please.
Composer Bach.
Yes, there's one mark.
This must be a suite. From a suite. From a movement of a suite.
Very good.
Good. How much have I got?
We've got about 1.2 marks, actually, at the moment.
What do you want for the other point?
Give me the number. I think it's suite 16.
Well,
popular name.
Let us say I have on my card Bach so-and-so, which is the popular title, from suite number so-and-so in so-and-so minor.
Well, no.
No. Well, better known, really, best known is Badinery, from the suite number two in B minor.
Not by me.
No, right. 1.5 marks, I think. Fair enough. Frank, in your case, it's not a middle, it's an end, but the end of what? And again, who's the singer?
Lyric by William Shakespeare.
Yes. Therefore, the end of...
Of the temp... No, Twelfth Night.
Twelfth Night, yes.
Festus. Hey ho, the wind and the rain.
Yes, Festus song.
Rain, it raineth every day.
Uh-huh. And the singer.
The singer. There's rather a number of them going...
Well, yes, but she was very much in the lead there.
Oh, yes, there was a lead singer. Yes, I'll grant you that, Steve.
Yes.
No, we're going to play this cool. We're going
you
to
are.
Given,
yes.
given
Pretend
the name,
we don't know.
Given the names of the backing group.
Yes.
There well. Was Audrey O'Farrell.
Not Audrey.
Yes.
The one with the ginger hair.
Yes.
Her mother had a royal shop. For
well, her own. Mother is the ultimate
no.
group too.
No.
This is interesting.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen,
two of us ladies.
Yes, yes. With the hair hanging.
Yes. If I may intrude, there might well have been a trombone prominent in the backing group. I
that was Granny. You remember, tall, elegant lady. Rather superb.
Well, I am trying to help, aren't I? Trombone? No. No. The singer was Ottilie Patterson.
Ah.
Wife of Chris Barber, the trombonist. You have one mark out of two, Frank.
Ah.
You're going to hear now, each of you, a single line of music with words. The question is, how many years passed between the words and the music being written? In every case, the words came first and then the music followed afterwards, but how long after? Get the idea?
No problem.
Right, Ian, here's yours. It's very short.
Well, the words, I can't tell you the words that he employed there, but it's roughly translated, a rough translation of Hark, Hark the Lark, which
yes.
is what that originally was.
A very precise translation.
Which is W. Shakespeare.
Yes. And
so that puts us back about...
Never was your favourite kind of question in this, was it?
No, yes. But I know the composers, but yes. I'm a bit hazy on the dates. Schubert.
Yes. Have a guess at the number of years between the words and the music being written.
Well, Schubert was sort of late 1700s.
Mm.
And Shakespeare was
16.
No,
15.
It's about 250.
Yeah.
Go on.
50. Yeah, I'll give you that. It was 216 years, actually. Shakespeare in Cymbeline wrote Hark, Hark the Lark, 1610. Schubert the music in 1826.
We worked very hard there, didn't
you
we?
You do
really?
Very well. I think you get two marks for that. Dennis, again, how many years between the words being written and the music composed?
Was that many, many take a look past?
Yes.
It was, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh, that was ever such a long time ago.
That's right.
That was Daniel, at the time of Daniel. It was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego round about then.
Mm. Right? Well, go on, have a shot. And do you know
I don't know when that was.
What about the music?
I don't know who did the music. The only music is Shadrach, Meshach, or the one that Albert Whelan sings about Daniel. Was it? Oh, Lord, you delivered Daniel from the fiery furnace.
It's not that one.
No.
Yeah.
Honestly, Ian, come to his aid. Ian.
Well, I was wondering whether this was Belshazzar's feast.
That's right.
Which would make it Walton.
Yes, that's
which
right.
Which would, I mean, he must have written Belshazzar's feast round about sometime between the two wars,
yes.
I would have said.
Fair enough. And King Belshazzar's unfortunate demise.
Well, I mean, I think we're more precise at this end than we probably could be at the other.
Well,
I
no,
would
I'm,
say about, yeah, wait I'm a minute, about 4,000 years.
It really isn't near enough, Dennis.
No?
2,470 years.
Right.
The words were written, if you remember, on the night that King Belshazzar died, which was 539 BC. And Sir William Walton set the story to music in 1931. 2,470 years, one mark out of two. David, here's yours.
I didn't get a word there.
Do you know what it is, David?
Well, the interval is certainly shorter than that in Dennis's question. I should say just about as long as it took Wagner to put down the pen and blot the page of the libretto that he'd written for Rienzi and then take a new page and start writing the music.
I'm going to accept that totally. I have three answers here, which I'll read you. 14 years, if you like, or 7 years, depending on whether you take the origin of Wagner's Rienzi to be the drama by Mary Russell Mitford, 1828, or the novel by Bulwer Lytton, 1835. But, of course, since Wagner wrote the libretto himself, 1 year, 1 day, 1 hour, you got 2 marks, David, for that.
Well, actually, he made a cup of tea and then he started on the music.
He did actually spend a certain amount of time in this very city, wandering around trying to find Bulwer Lytton when he was in London. Anyway.
So was his wife.
Looked up in the
Frank, again, how long between the words and the music being written?
She seems to be in a state of perturbation.
Yes, it's about a boy, actually. It's a treble, a boy treble. For I will consider my cat Jeffrey, he said.
Yes, well, a forgivable mistake at this distance. He is worried about his cat Geraldine or something.
Jeffrey.
J-E-O-F-F-R-Y. Well.
I do try very hard to pitch things in your especial period, and I tried again here.
Well, that's, If it was Hodge, I'd be...
No. No. Yes, you were. The same time as Hodge. Hodge's master went to see this chap.
Oh, fair enough.
And so said he was as sane as he was.
He was as sane as he was.
I really can't...
Was he a clergyman in the Fleet?
No.
Prison?
No.
Never mind that, because that was about 1760. So, when was the music written? Come along, lad.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Jeffrey was a friend of Dr. Johnson's, the owner of the cat Jeffrey.
Really?
So have a guess at the number of years, and then I'll tell you the answer to the
200.
Question. No.
Right,
no.
150. Well, you 17. Minus 8. The music came first.
You get half a mark for your first guess, 200 years. It was 180 years. I will consider my cat Jeffrey comes from Christopher Smart's Rejoice in the Lamb, 1763. Benjamin Britten set it to music in 1943. Here's a piece of music from a ballet. You won't recognise it. At least I'm banking on the fact that you don't recognise it. Because I want you to listen and then tell me, please, what you think is going on at the time on the stage. When all four of you have described what you visualise, we'll play the music again, and then I'll tell you what really happens in the ballet at that point and what it's called. Here's the music. Ian, just briefly, what's happening there?
I should say that it was possibly two grand pianos having a fight. One then finding that it was falling very, very slowly down a long staircase. Presumably there's... that's an unlikely explanation in a ballet. I've never seen a prima ballerina dressed up as a grand piano. One feels there must be some sort of conflict. Are those explosions?
Well, I'll just accept whatever your first thought is.
Oh, I see. Yes,
is,
yes. Well,
see,
I would say there is a fight of some kind.
Yes. Dennis, how do you visualize that music?
I thought it was metallic sounding. With a touch of wood in there, and I...
You're hedging your bets, aren't you?
Yeah. And boom, and it went a boom, and I thought it was a red Indian who'd lost his blanket trying to send a smoke signal with a large casserole dish. Came out was an obscene message, so he got drummed out of the Comanches.
Thank you very much. David, what did you see in your mind's eye when that was on?
It's Copland, isn't it?
Ah, well, that's what you think, is it?
Mm. Well, I think it's Copland, and I think it's about a duel between cowboys. It's a gunfight, and that's what all of those explosions are.
Gunfight, says David Franklin. Right, Frank, what form does your ballet take?
I thought it was a rather unfair sort of football match between fish. I can't explain why I think that. Except there's one rather large fish
like a dolphin or whale who's thundering around to start with. And there's a haddock who's rather worried with his football boots, to which he is unaccustomed. So he's sort of staggering around and going, and trying to gain his balance, because this poor little haddock thins, you know, trying to balance on football boots. And there's all of us, dun, 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 waiting. I think that's probably fairly near.
I think pretty close, yes. And any choreographer looking for something to do, you know, might like to tackle that. Let me just play you that last little bit again, just as a refresher, and I'll tell you about it then.
Clearly.
I'm going to give Ian Wallace one mark for saying that it was a fight. I'm going to give Dennis one mark for suggesting that Red Indians might have been involved. And I'm going to give David Franklin two marks for knowing exactly what it was. It's the scene in Aaron Copland's ballet, Billy the Kid, Billy is captured by the pursuing posse led by his friend Pat. So, uh-oh. Now we know. Hard luck, Frank. And leading in the game at the moment by two marks, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. Some general questions for you now. Ian, who became known as the wheelchair prima donna?
Ah, this was somebody who really was a wheelchair prima donna.
Yes, that's why they called her that.
Yes, I know, but you know, it might have been one of those sort of, derogatory remarks.
Or something.
It wasn't
of course,
at all. This was Marjorie Lawrence.
Yes, that's right.
Who was stricken with polio sometime, I would have thought, around about the 1940s.
Yes.
Or thereabouts.
Can I just give the details? You're absolutely right. You have them on. Infantile paralysis in 1941. She reappeared on the concert stage the following year. And a year after that, this is quite incredible, she sang the part of Isolde, Tristan and Isolde, from a wheelchair at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York. Wonderful story of courage. Marjorie Lawrence is right, and you get a mark in for the name. Dennis, hum for me, please, Irving Berlin's 1914 non-hit called Smile and Show Your Dimple. Can you just hum the
yes.
tune? You can.
Yeah, that's a favourite one. I'm going to ask you one, actually, because these are the little bits I like about musical knowledge. It goes da 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 da.
He used it later as Easter Parade.
As Easter Parade.
Smile and show your dimple. What? I think the second line must have been, it's really very simple.
Yeah, or it's better than a pimple. Yeah. Yeah. Do you know the one that was originally called Come On and Pet Me?
Come On and Pet Me?
Yeah.
No.
It was then it went on to be, Sometimes I'm Happy.
Oh, no.
Sometimes.
No, no.
More next week.
Wow, yeah. More next week.
You know, we haven't even got to the singing round. You've sung more tonight than you've ever sung before.
I know, I'm inglorious for it.
Dennis is all right, as long as he doesn't realise he's singing.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. You've got a very nasty shock for him in the next round after this, actually. Enough of that for the moment. David, in the year 1900, Leopold Antoni Stanislav Boleslavovich got the job of organist at the Church of St. James's Piccadilly. What did he then decide to call himself?
John Bowles. Yeah. Did he give up playing the organ?
Yes. Went in for something
And he
else.
Became a conductor.
That's right. You got him.
And the conductor is Stokowski.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, this must have been what he called himself, Stokes.
That's right. It's rather lovely, yes. His name was Boleslavovich. When he came to London, he realised he had to have an English name, so he called himself Stokes and lived and worked here and spoke English quite happily. He'd worked at the church in Piccadilly there, the organ. Then he went to America, where it was necessary to have a foreign name again, so he changed his name from Stokes to Stokowski. And there's a rather nice musician's story that when he came back to London, speaking, of course, perfectly good English, although he affects not to. When he came back to London, where he'd worked all these years, he was met at the station and driven in a taxi past Westminster, and he pointed up at one point to Big Ben and said, "How you call Big Clock?" I don't know if it's true, never mind. You've got a mark. Frank, a famous conductor whose first language was not English, and by the way, it wasn't Stokowski, famous conductor once stopped an orchestral rehearsal, stamped his foot and said, "Is blow too forth the faggots?" Please go into decline. Can you please work up for me what he meant? Is blow to forth the faggots?
Faggots were bassoons.
Ah.
Because they really look all like I need bassoons.
Yes.
I mean, if they look like faggots, well, they're supposed to, because they're a couple of pipes strung together. And so it's don't right. blow so forth the faggot. It's don't... Well, it's diminuendo, gentlemen.
That would do very nicely, yes, especially the bassoons. And to this day, of course, on orchestral scores, you often see the bassoons referred to as fagotti, faggots.
It's rather like that marvellous quotation of Leon Goossens about his own instrument, the oboe, which he said is an ill-wind instrument that nobody blows good.
The final round for this week concerns what the boys in Oliver called food, food, glorious food. It's funny how obsessed songwriters and composers have been with the subject of food. I suppose because they've been short of it so often. Anyway, leaving Ian to last, as we always do in this final round, Dennis, what makes your eyes light up and your stomach say, howdy?
Boiled beef and carrots. Boiled beef and carrots. That's the stuff you'd all be killed. Makes you fit and it makes you well.
No. Makes your eyes light up. Your stomach say, howdy.
Oh, oh, golly, yeah. It's shoe fly pie and apple something dowdy.
Yes.
Or howdy.
Well,
not
howdy.
Some time.
One out and of two, but you didn't even sing it. Shoe fly pie and apple pan dowdy. Makes your eyes light up. Your stomach say, howdy. Yeah. Never thought I'd have to sing that myself. Never mind. David, according to Herrick, where exactly do ripe cherries flourish? Answer in song, please.
There where Julia's lips do smile, there on cherry land or isle. There, and then there's another bar which links into cherry, ripe, cherry, ripe.
Yes, it's a very...
It's very difficult middle age.
It is. It's a very brave try, and I'll give you 2 marks for it. If so be you ask me where they do grow, I answer, there where my Julia's lips do smile. You certainly got it. There's the land of cherries, or Cherry Isle.
What's that other cherry song, which is sort of perpetual motion? How sweeter than the cherry, how bloodier than the berry. Oh, move away, don't make me take the cherry. How bloodier than the cherry, how...
Very good words. Very good words, but the tune isn't quite right.
Frank, see if you can sing the one you're asked to sing now. 2 marks for you, if you can tell me. What food does Little Buttercup bear in her basket?
It's sort of like asking what the goods train carried on the Rock Island line.
Yes.
I got pea going. She had ices and spices and coffee. And if they were sort of sweetmeats such as you would give your sweetheart at a fair.
It was a very good answer. You won't expect any marks for it yet.
No.
What she sang was, I've treacle and toffee, I've tea and I've coffee, soft tommy and succulent chops. I've chickens and conies and pretty polonies and excellent peppermint drops.
Big basket.
Big lady. In Act One of HMS Pinafore. So, Ian, to you. Marvellous thought. Wine by the pint. Can you set it to music for us, please? Wine by the pint.
Yes, if we go north of the border, I think I can.
Yes, that'll do it.
Oh, excuse me. That was a nasty moment.
Gay, bring to me a pint of wine and fill it in a silver tassy that I may drink before I go. A service to my bonny lassie.
Oh, lovely. Yes. Went down very well with an Edinburgher here in the front row, I happen to know. Anyway, we all knock off there for a stiff drink. You've been listening to my music. It's a victory, on this occasion, by 3 marks for Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. Bye-bye.
Taking part in My Music were David Franklin, Frank Muir, Dennis Norden, and Ian Wallace. The questions were compiled by our chairman, Steve Race, and the program was produced for the BBC by Tony Shryan.